Welcome to The Mortgage Life, a space for down-to-earth conversations about how mortgages contribute to your life.
Well, that sounds canned and maybe a little boring.
What? There are so many parts to the mortgage industry and real estate finance we can explore and share with our listeners.
Okay, you're right. You're right, Mindy. Our goal is to help secure our clients' financial future.
I'm Pete Solomosi.
I'm Mindy Bodwin.
And I'm Sue Solomosi. We're your hosts. Welcome to The Mortgage Life. Hello, hello. Good morning. The Bank of Canada has raised its policy rate by a quarter percentage again. This is our 11th special feature. So we've been doing a special feature episode with big air quotes every Bank of Canada rate announcement date. And for a while, we're like, well, it's been raised again. We have nothing else to say. Same as last month. It's still inflation's still rising. Things are still happening. But I mean, at this point, we've only had one where we had a pause and then we still didn't know what to say. So Brendan, maybe you can help us. What do we say? What is happening?
What do you say? This was kind of on the horizon ever since, I guess it was the April CPI came in kind of hot. Jobs numbers have still been really strong. First quarter GDP was stronger than expected. Consumer spending is very strong. And then we had in May and June a pretty remarkable turnaround in housing activity. So all those things together were really not what the Bank of Canada was looking for in terms of the effect of their past year of rate hikes on the economy. We did get pretty decent inflation numbers for May. And then June U.S. inflation came in this morning, a little better than expected. So I think what's going to happen now, and it seemed from their statement that they are, again, on kind of a conditional pause. But if the economy continues to outperform, we could see rates go higher at some point.
Boo.
Boo's right. It's interesting. We look at markets, you know, 5-year bond yields hit 4% for the first time since 2007, earlier in this week or last week. With this morning, 5-year bond yields down 10 basis points. So at least bond markets are not pricing in at quite as hawkish a Bank of Canada as pre-announcement. So that's some silver lining perhaps, but it does mean 5-year fixed rates are, you know, right now I think, you know, the most recent average was around 5.65 or something. Maybe they stay there, maybe they go a little bit higher. That's like the highest for the year. Clearly it's probably going to be a year until we get any relief on the mortgage front for homeowners and home or prospective home buyers. The one thing in the statement that was kind of interesting was that they, in their forecast, they now don't expect the inflation to fall back to its 2% target until mid-2025. That's pushed out almost a year. In my mind, my sort of rule of thumb has been that the bank's probably not going to cut rates until they see inflation back to 2%, headline inflation, or probably, you know, core, which is kind of stuck around 3-4%. If that's not until 2025, I was sort of thinking that the bank would start cutting next year, and that's still what financial markets think. And there's about a 91% chance, 91% probability in contracts tied to the Bank of Canada overnight rate that were, you know, 75 basis points lower by the first quarter of 2025. I don't know. If we're not going to see inflation fall to 2% until mid-2025, that might push some of that. Those rate cuts into 2025 instead.
I have a question about one of the things they said, and maybe just coming off of what you just said. So the bank says that they're resolute in their commitment to restoring price stability, which means that they want to hit that 2% mark. But they also say we'll be evaluating whether the evolution of excess demand, inflation expectations, wage growth, and corporate pricing behavior are consistent with achieving the 2% inflation target. What does that mean?
What does that mean? Like, my eyeballs are spinning. Like, whoa.
Is there a new inflation benchmark?
No. I think what they're trying to say is that they're looking for excess demand in the economy to be reduced. This is another weird thing. The way they measure excess demand formally is through their measure of the output gap. So how the economy is performing compared to its potential. And the output gap was never, I think it was maybe briefly positive, or they have a couple measures where it's actually negative while they were saying there was excess demand. So it's by their own measures, which maybe you don't trust, there was no excess demand. So that's always been a weird disconnect. There clearly is. I think they need to go back to their models. But I think what they're saying is, if we don't see wage growth fall, if we don't see some weakness in the job market, and if we don't see GDP slow materially in the next sort of, you know, next sort of the second half of 2023, then they would revisit whether or not they need to raise interest rates again. That's the way I interpreted that. If inflation expectations aren't coming down, if wage growth is still around 4 to 5%, and if we're still in an excess demand environment where the labor market's creating a lot of jobs and employment rates, you know, still hovering around its all-time low, then they would probably need to raise rates again.
It just boggles my mind that having stable employment is working against us. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, the Bank of Canada is legally mandated to get inflation to 2%. So it's sort of solely focused on doing so. The way, unfortunately, that we get inflation back down to its target is to inflict some harm on the economy. And that means, you know, one of those things where the Bank of Canada would like to see people losing their jobs in order to get inflation back down. This is unfortunately the way monetary policy works.
I was just making sure I heard that right. Like, what?
We haven't had to deal with this, right, in a long time. Mm-hmm. And now people are like, surprised that the monetary policy mechanism, transmission mechanism, is like, you raise rates and people spend less money, and some people lose their jobs and employment rate rises. Like, in, we have very cold models where this happens. Those are real people, but that's mm-hmm. that's how it works. And it's funny that we haven't had to deal with this in over a decade. So everyone's like now surprised that this is the way monetary policy works.
Well, and I have a question alongside that, something that we discussed the last time you were on our podcast. Immigration. I mean, immigration is creating a stronger job market in that there's less unemployment, and it's creating more demand because there's more spenders in the economy. So how is this factoring in?
The real impact on the immigration side right away, we see it anyways, is on the housing market, because we're already undersupplied, and now we're kind of importing a fair amount of housing demand on the rental side of things right away. Is obviously not, you know, when new immigrant families arrive, they don't immediately purchase a home, especially in more expensive markets. And we don't have a lot of rental supply. Rents are rising very quickly. And then eventually also they add to housing demand on the ownership side, which, you know, we're pushing up rents, we're pushing up prices, because this is happening at a time where we don't have nearly enough supply of either ownership or rental housing. So kind of a disconnect. Sometimes it's the job of the Bank of Canada to counter what the federal government is doing on the fiscal side. That's why, or on other policy, that's why we have independent central banks, so that they act as a check on things that the whoever's in power in the government is doing. It's, you know, really the benefit of having independence in your central banks, and why we don't want to threaten that. And that's how you get sort of spiraling inflation, because if you have a central bank that's just sort of accommodating whatever the government is doing, then that's how you get in trouble.
I like that you said spiraling inflation, because the analogy that's in my head is, I was throwing the ball for my dog the other day and it landed in between his feet and he had to like chase himself backwards to catch the ball, but the ball kept moving with his feet. So he's chasing his tail. But where does it stop, right?
Yeah, what you would get if you had a non-independent central bank. Right now, I mean, we're making a lot of progress on inflation, especially if you strip out things like mortgage costs, which somewhat Bank of Canada is somewhat driving. We're actually back to about a 2.5% 3-month annualized inflation, which is right where we want it to be.
This is why I say boo, because we're still going up. So interestingly, we've got the overnight rate, or that prime lending rate, is at the highest point it's been since 2001. Brendan, you also mentioned that the fixed rates mm-hmm. are kind of the highest they've been since 2007. So kind of buckle up.
We'll see. On the housing side of things, things were going basically exactly the way our models told us they would until April. And then all of a sudden, especially in the lower mainland of BC, and oddly the Kootenai, home sales all of a sudden were like 5 to 10% above normal for those months in May and June, which was really weird, really unexpected. I would guess that the most recent increase in rates in fixed mortgage rates is going to mute some of that. We saw things slow after the Bank of Canada's rate increase in June. So I would guess that we'll see that dampen activity in the second half, but it's been an extraordinarily resilient market. Prices are up 10% since the start of the year. I don't think that's what the Bank of Canada had in mind either. And so we'll see. I think there's sort of a relentless bid for housing in the province because of population growth, immigration, demographics. There's just a whole bunch of 30-year-olds out there that really need homes right now. And so there's just gonna be a lot of pressure on a housing stock that just isn't really equipped to handle that pressure.
One last question. How are we doing compared to the other countries like in the G7 or even our neighbor?
On what measure?
Like in terms of our rates, like how is the U.S. kind of central bank rate versus ours, and how is their kind of inflation?
Fed funds rate is it at 5.25 or 5.5 right now? And they were on a pause, and the sort of consensus is they're going to be raising rates at their next meeting. Job growth there slowed slightly in June, but was still fairly strong. Unemployment rate's very low. Inflation in the U.S. I think just fell to about 3% year over year. So kind of similar, very similar. But the Fed funds rate is a bit higher than the overnight rate in Canada, and they're looking to go up again. I would guess that they are going to probably top out between 5.75 and 6. But their inflation has been a little bit more stubborn than ours, even though I think like their core inflation is still at 4.9. We're around 3.5 to 4%. So we're doing slightly better on inflation. And then internationally, Europe is a total mess. And I think the UK is still dealing with inflation. It's like trying to remember what it was, but not nearly as much progress, and growth has been slower as well. So US and Canada are actually doing fairly well compared to international comparisons.
Well, thank you again for your insights.
You bet. Anytime. Hopefully the fourth time I'm on, we'll be talking about a rate cut.
Yeah. I know. I think it was a year ago that we had that 1% increase, and that's when we had you on for the first time. So,
July 2022.
Mm-hmm.
We were so much more innocent then. All right,
we're so much Thank more you. Innocent.
So much more naive.
Thanks, Brendan. Yes.
Good seeing y'all.
This is The Mortgage Life.
We look forward to continuing the conversation.
So come back and listen.